96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher, D.C. mayor for life, man of the people, loved by many, reviled by some. Marion Barry is telling his own story now when so many others have tried to tell it for him. His new autobiography is out and it's titled Mayor for Life, The Incredible Story of Marion Barry Jr. The Ward 8 councilman joins me now to talk about the book, his legacy, and the city that made him a household name. The lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, outside of the D.C. calling area, 855-288-4876, 855-288-4876. You can also comment on my Facebook page at facebook.com/Harold T. Fisher or follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR. Councilman Barry, thanks for seeing me and
Thank you very much, Harold. Invited me. I've been here many times.
Absolutely. We always love to have you.
And your listening audience. I've been very good to be involved with that. That way, before I get to the book, several things. One, I was at the launching of WHUR. Before it became WHUR, I was nothing. And I remember Melvin Lindsay and Quiet Storm and some other people. The other one is Freedom Summer in 64. I was in Mississippi. I was a student at the University of Tennessee working on my graduate degree in chemistry. I had done 3 years, had about a year left, and I got tired of being the only black student among 3,000 students. Plus, I was getting tired of chemistry because I was working in the civil rights movement in the summertime. And so I went to Antioch College for the training session, and I met Turner, Goodman, and Cheney. We had about 1,000, mostly white people, coming down. But these were sons and daughters of editors of magazines and Time Magazine and other places. It opened Mississippi up. It opened it up wide open because it had been so closed to that time. And I just wanted to, I was supposed to go down there, but I couldn't go. Because I had to work on my, selling my book, you know, and doing my council work, you know.
Well, you know, certainly... you have done, you know, an amazing job as a council member, you know, as a mayor, as a political figure, as a community activist, as a mainstay here in Washington. But my first question for you, the subtitle here, The Incredible Story of Marion Barry. Is the story incredible?
It's absolutely incredible. I was born March 6, 1936 in the Delta of Mississippi. On a farm. My mother went to about the third or fourth grade. My father, third or fourth grade. I overcame a lot. Because most blacks who were born during that period migrated to Chicago or went back on the farm. I went to Memphis, went somewhere. But they didn't do the extraordinary things that I was able to do. God gave me that gift of tenacity, of courage, of vision. Because in the Bible it says, if without vision, the people perish. And so I've used that to make and do incredible things.
Why did you decide to finally publish an autobiography?
Well, I was tired of everybody that's talking about Marion Barry.
And they do.
Yeah, they know. They're experts on Marion Barry. But it's all about what. I was full-time mayor. What? Civil rights activist. What? A number of things. But I want people to know who Marion Barry is, and I put it in my own words. The book is frank. I got the good, the ugly, bad, mostly good. And I wanted people to learn from my experiences so they could deal with their lives like that. Because we all go through something. Several times we go through something. We go through storms. And sometimes we stay in the storm a long time. Sometimes we get out of it and go back into it. Sometimes we try to ignore it. It's whether it's drug and alcohol or finances or divorce or some tragic situation in the family. It's that way. And so people want me to be an example of some things of overcoming. This book is about overcoming, by never saying no, by having tenacity, having courage to carry out what you want to do. Like when I came into the mayor's office, I had a great vision about Washington. I didn't just come in here and...
What was that vision?
The great vision I had was to make Washington, which was the sleepiest southern town, somewhat from segregated days, a cosmopolitan time that it is now. Downtown, West End, Georgetown, but also our neighborhoods. I put the Reeves Center at 14th and U in 1986 in order to try to spur development because 14th Street was a wreck from the disorders. 7th Street was a wreck. 8th Street was a wreck. And so we put a government building over on 8th Street. But the Reeves building was a symbol of great progress. The structure of it is exciting. It's not just a box, some government box somewhere else. Got a number of government agents in there. I was with Dora Mitchell the other night at a book signing at Congress Heights School.
Mm-hmm.
And he reminded me that in that building, he put a branch of Industrial Bank.
Oh, Industrial Bank, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a
black-owned bank.
It's about economic development. We had contracts 3% when I came in. When I went out, 47% went to Hispanics and black people. And that was a lot of money, millions of dollars. I've helped and given opportunities to black millionaires, such as Bob Johnson. I helped Bob Johnson get the cable franchise. And after he got that, he hooked up with TCI, an operator. Then he wanted to keep BET in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And we owned some land out on New York Avenue, the city did. I leased that land to him for $1 a year as a way for him to get started. And that headquarters is still out there. Don Peoples, same thing. Want to put an office building in Anacostia, nobody gave me any money. I signed the lease before he even laid a brick.
You said your book is about overcoming. And we know, you know, as we have kind of followed, you know, your health, that you had a struggle with health. And when you came in, you said that it looks like you're back in the battle with the blood disorder. How are you feeling?
I feel great. I had a blood disorder. It kills about a third of people who get it. But God saw fit to bring me back. I had a good God and some good doctors, and I'm still recovering. I still can't walk as far as I used to walk or as fast as I used to walk because that blood infection knocked me to my knees. I couldn't stand up. I couldn't pick up a piece of paper. Couldn't do anything. Because the blood goes throughout your body, but that's just a part of my life.
But are you under treatment now?
I'm under physical therapy. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I do physical therapy 3 times a week. Occupational therapy sometimes, and that whole thing. But the book is about struggle, about never giving up, holding your head high. Don't be arrogant. Be humble. I was born a black boy in the Delta, Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
in 1936. My mother went to the third or fourth grade, father third or fourth grade. They were sharecroppers. That's where the white man sells you the seeds at a higher price than he paid for them
mm-hmm.
and buys the cotton back at a lower price than he's going to get. It's an exploitative system. And my mother, they were usually in about $3,000 or $4,000 over the course of a year. That's all. In cash, because he got other things on credit here and there. My mother got tired of that. I had 2 sisters.
Let me stop you because I've got to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to take a phone call or two because I'm sure there's some people that want to holler at you briefly.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking to D.C. Council Member Marion Barry about his legacy here in Washington, D.C., and his new autobiography. It's titled Mayor for Life, The Incredible Story of Marion Barry Jr. 202-319-7810 outside of the D.C. calling area, 855-288-4876. We'll be back in a moment. Back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking to Ward 8 Councilman Marion Barry. He's here in studio with me to discuss his new autobiography and his legacy. It's titled Mayor for Life, the incredible story of Marion Barry Jr. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Outside of the D.C. calling area, 855-288-4876, 855-288-4876. Let's go to Mike calling from Washington, D.C. Mike, go ahead. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you. Yes, first of all, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
First of all, I just want to congratulate the Mayor for Life on his book, and I hope him all the success that he can get, because Mayor for Life deserves everything. He's right for, on his book, concentrating on the positive things that he did instead of, you know, trying to focus on the negative, you know, people trying to put the mayor down.
So what's your question, Mike?
Hello?
What's your question? Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, like I said, I just want to congratulate the Mayor for Life. And I want to ask him how he sees the direct, how he feels about the direction that the city is going in.
Mike, thank you so much.
Are you the Mike, my neighbor?
He's gone, but he's listening. Go ahead.
Yeah, he's my neighbor. I live at on Top of Street, southeast of Martin King. Things are not going too well in the minority contracting area. I got up to 47%. It's probably back down to 25-27% at the most, because in order for that to happen, I had to have a philosophy and a vision about economic development, putting money in the hands of qualified black people. I also did a lot to enhance the black middle class in this town, so much so that a number of them have moved to Prince George's County. And Prince George's County is the richest predominantly black county in America as a result of what we did here in Washington, is right across the border. I'm not going to let these Eastern Avenue, Southern Avenue, or Western Avenue divide us, because we all are in the same boat. Might have come over in different ships. And so I want to use that. Also, you know, you got some Barry haters out here, and that doesn't bother me. I got one columnist who hadn't even read the book. He wrote a column on it. But it doesn't bother me. The people in this town know of the tremendous amount of things I've done in terms of jobs, in terms of housing, in terms of downtown. Look at it now. I mean, all these shiny new buildings up, that was a blueprint of mine. I couldn't do them all at once when I was there, but I had left a blueprint, a foundation, to make Washington one of the finest cities anywhere in the world. On the other hand, we had the highest poverty of any city in America, and poverty is prevalent. A third of our population are in poverty. There are 18,000 families on temporary assistance for needy families, 31,000 children. But so we got to tackle that. The next step, though, Harold, is civil rights, S-I-L-V-E-R. We need more money in our pockets, because we can't compete in this capitalist society without being given an opportunity. My mother always told me, in order to be just as good as a white person, you got to really be twice as good, and not to forget where I came from. And she taught me that, and I still live. She was 92. She passed about 5, 6, 7 years ago, and she had a great influence on my life.
Well, I want to talk more about where D.C. is, where it's going, your thoughts about that, the changing face of the people that are here. We're going to talk about Chocolate City and what happened to that as well, and your thoughts about your life and some of the ups and downs. So stay with us. I'm talking to Marion Barry, Ward 8 council member here in Washington, D.C., also known as Mayor for Life. 202-319-7810 or 855-288-4876. Stay on the phone. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, Sirius XM Channel 142, HBCU, and Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm sitting with D.C.'s Ward 8 Councilmember Marion Barry. He is telling his own story in a new autobiography titled Mayor for Life, The Incredible Story of Marion Barry, Jr. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, outside of the D.C. calling area, 855-288-4876, 855-288-4876. Before I go back to him, let me take another phone call. Ricky, calling from Washington, D.C. Ricky, thanks for calling. Quickly, what's on your mind?
Hello, how you doing?
Doing just fine.
To the mayor for life, sir, we appreciate what you did when you was in office. I grew up in Ward 5, and growing up as a young kid, we always had summer youth programs, and you took care of the elderly, you know, and that's something we can never forget, you know, as people, you know, we all have our faults. But to me, sir, you are one of the top.
Thank you very much.
That's all I have to say about that. Thank you, sir, and God bless you.
Well, thank you so much, Ricky. I appreciate
that.
Since
he mentioned summer jobs, Harold.
Yeah, please, go ahead, because that is one of the...
In 16 years...
That was your big thing.
100,000 young people went through that program. I started in 1979. That was a dream of mine, because when I grew up, I had to bag groceries, I had to carry morning paper, evening paper, sell rags, sell pop bottles, and carry groceries to people's homes to try to make his money. And I said, these young people don't need to be like that. They ought to be in a meaningful situation where they can learn something, they can develop some skills, and they can find out what they may want to do in life. So in maybe 2 months after I'd been in office, I called Maddie Taylor, and she was head of DOES at that time. I said, Maddie, I want to have every young person in 1979 who wants a job, get a job, a meaningful job, get training. And she said, oh, Mr. Mayor, this bureaucracy can't take it. As we go think about it, Maddie, because if you can't do it, I'll find somebody who can. And she developed the thing. So that summer, from 4,000 to 25,000 in less than a year, 25,000 young people got jobs. Now, we had havoc the first 2 years because we didn't have computers and people getting paid at midnight and all those kind of things. But they were thankful. You can't go anywhere in Washington, sometime in the country, but you don't find somebody that said, you gave me my first summer job, mm-hmm. gave me a start, you kept me out of jail, you did this, you did this, you did that. And then you have our seniors, 100,000 seniors in this town. I was a champion for seniors long before it became something to do in terms of seniors. Mm-hmm. They're in the twilight of their life. A lot of these black seniors have worked from sun up to sundown, try to send their kids to college, into a career, etc. Then you have the young people today, though, is a lot different than they were when I was trying to put them
How
in
so?
Work. Well, one, young people today are very daring. They're not scared of anything. Mm-hmm. And they think they're right about everything. That includes my son. You know, he's 34 years old. He's in business, hiring D.C. residents in the construction business. And sometimes I try to say, Chris, why don't you do this? No, Dad, I'm doing it this way. I said, if I see you about to put your hand in the fire, I'm going to tell you. If you want to still put it in there, that's your business. You let me try it out myself, Dad. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the attitude. I understand it. They watch these videos and they watch this other junk that's on radio and listen to that kind of stuff. But they're a great group of kids around here.
D.C.
love them. That's what they need.
D.C. is changing. You've seen it. You've spoken about it. When you were mayor, it was called, you know, Chocolate City. You know, there were songs on the radio about it. You know, a lot of times you could leave town as a Washingtonian and they'll say, where you're from? And you say, I'm from Chocolate City. They knew you were from D.C. D.C. is no longer Chocolate City. You can look at the U.S. Census reports. Talk to me a little bit about that. Do you think that is good or bad for the changing demographics?
Well, first of all, we were about 65% of the population when I came in. And Tony Williams started this whole trend of inviting young white people in. He didn't say white people, but the kind of programs he had meant that was there. So what we have now is gentrification. Shaw has gone completely. I was riding down First Street the other day in Bloomingdale. All those houses are owned by white people. And what they do, they move into a neighborhood, and the owners are renting those houses. And so the owner decides, I can make some money on this. He puts the people out. And then somebody comes by with our seniors. They paid about $30,000, $40,000, maybe $50,000 some 30 years ago for their homes, offering them $400,000. That's hard to resist. I couldn't resist that.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm up in age, what am I do? My kids don't want to come in and take over the house. My son and my daughters don't. But Petworth is gone. Crestwood is gone. Even up in the flower trees on the Silver Coast, Holly, Geranium, all those streets, they're gone. I remember a friend of mine used to live on Holly Street between 16th and 14th. That whole two blocks, 100% black families.
Mm-hmm.
Now you find about two black families on the whole stretch. And what bothers me is the displacement of black people. Displacement of black people. I know I supported Mayor Gray, and he was talking about these cranes in the air, et cetera. I said, Vince, for black people, those cranes represent displacement and gentrification. And so that's what I say to gentrifiers. If you will move into a neighborhood, get active with the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just come in and walk your dog and go on home. Get active in the neighborhood. Help solve some of these problems. Get to know your neighbors who are less fortunate than you are. Because Washington has become a city of haves and have-nots.
Mm.
Haves and have-nots. And Helen Keller once said that those who have a hard time understanding those who don't. That's the case. City Council is more conservative. When I came into council in 1974, there were two white people. Dave Clark from Ward 1, Potter Shackleton from Ward 3. Now we have 7 white people in the council. We get along pretty good. But their philosophies, in a lot of instances, are different than my philosophy. Different than most of the blacks on the council's philosophy. They care deeply, but they don't. If you're not walking in my shoes, it's kind of hard to figure that out. And so we just have to try to do all we can to continue. I talked to Muriel Bowser about that the other day. I'm supporting her for mayor about putting a lot of emphasis on homeownership and how you continue helping the black middle class the same time you're helping the poor.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back to the phone lines. A lot of folks want to talk to you. Victoria calling from Baltimore. What's on your mind, Victoria?
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to say that my last name is Arbaugh, and as you know, there was a business that thrived when Marion Barry was mayor and is no longer in business. I think your greatest legacy for people of all colors is economic development, nurturing small businesses. The story about BET is phenomenal. There's so many leaders that could learn from you, and I want you to speak to them.
Well, part of the reason I wrote the book was to be instructive to other people. And economic development, right, that's the last chapter in the book. Where do we go from here? And I say we need SILVER, civil rights. I mean, give me an example of how wide the gap is. And Washington's a vibrant city in most places. But in Ward 8, the average salary is, family salary, is $26,000. And in Ward 3, and I really commend those folks who are working hard to get there, but it's $200,000. $200,000 compared to $26,000. You know, bread costs the same wherever you are. Other things cost the same. And so we got to try to close that economic gap. In fact, I was talking to our chairman, Phil Mendelson, the other day. I said, Phil, why don't we sponsor a summit, a serious summit, not no BS summit, where we really try to get at the roots of these things, because the city government has not been responsive as they should be in terms of reducing poverty. People don't ask to be born in poverty. They don't ask to be born anywhere. They're just born.
Mm-hmm.
Different colors, different economic status.
So what was his response?
We're going to do it.
Okay.
We're going to plan it for the fall in terms of reaching a segment of the community. One part of the community that we've got to get involved, they're not involved, that's the private sector. There are 300,000 jobs in the private sector in D.C., but only 30% of them are D.C. residents. The 70% are outside the city. These chief executive officers don't even live in the city. Their kids go to school in the suburbs. They go to church out there. They spend their money out there. Until we get them to understand that it's to their benefit to hire D.C. residents, that will help cut down crime. It will help cut down a lot of other things that are going on in terms of dependency. But we're going to work on that.
Okay.
I'm going to be hard.
Victoria, thank you so much for that. I want to talk to you a little bit more about you personally. Anyone who knows of Marion Barry, who was here when you were mayor, they knew of the difficult personal problems you've had. I don't want to so much talk about, you know, the drug, the alcohol, the other issues. The thing I wanted to ask you is, in hindsight, when you look back on some of the downsides, we all have personal failings. Do you ever wonder what effect your actions have had on the image of Washington, D.C.? How did you feel back then about being the butt, of jokes? It's kind of like Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. It doesn't go away.
Well, it won't go away because a lot of people in the media keep it going. The vista was 24 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't have gone to that hotel. I shouldn't have gone up in that room, even though it was an FBI sting. Even though 9 out of 12 jurors voted to acquit me on all charges, and I was convicted on another charge at another place, at Mayflower, I apologized to Sheeta and her family because she's a victim too.
Mm-hmm.
I apologized to my wife, to Effie, and to Cora, and to Christopher. And I apologized to the people of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
This country is a country of second chances, second and third chances. For those of us who are Christian, a disciple asked Jesus, Master, how many times should you forgive someone? He said, 70 times 70.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that. But on the other hand, you got to be sincere in your apology. You can't just be doing it perfunctorily. But it has not stopped me from caring deeply about the people of Washington, about programmatically putting things together to assist them. In terms of, like in Ward 8, the private sector has built over 10,000 either new or renovated housing since I've been over there. And so economics is where we got to go to close this gap.
Talk to me about statehood.
It
hasn't happened. You and others, obviously Mayor Gray, and on and on and on. The folks who came before you have been pulling on that rope and fighting that fight. Is it going to happen?
Not anytime soon. But we've got to fight, though. What's happening with statehood, a lot of Washingtonians, both black and white, don't see any value in statehood. Those who are low income know that the federal government going to give them Medicaid, give them TANF cash benefits, food stamps, subsidized housing, et cetera. And they don't see the value of having two senators and at least one or two congresspeople. So our job is to educate and wake them up that there is a value. Right now, our $11 billion budget, $6.2 million of it is our own money, had to go to the Congress.
Does it make you mad?
Yeah. Hell yeah. You know, you got to go ask them how we spend our own money. That's the craziest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm. Which brings me to
a... I think race is a factor there. And I think as Washington gets a little bit more balanced in terms of whites and black people, there may be a move once the Republicans get out of office.
Which brings me to...
We'll never get statehood with the Republicans. Well, never.
And that, before I take a break, I've got to ask you that because just today, and I spoke to you about this off air, the decriminalization of marijuana possession, that, D.C.'s new law now being, you know, challenged by a GOP congressman from Maryland, Andy Harris. Yes, it needs to go through, you know, House and Senate budget negotiations. But, you know, the fact that D.C. wants to make this a civil fine and this is being challenged, is this just another affront?
Another example. Tommy Wells and I worked awfully hard to get that through the council. I think it was a 13-0 vote. And hundreds and thousands of black boys in this town and around the country are being arrested for one or two bags of marijuana. So we got a record going to follow them the rest of their life for that. And so I say, Mr. Harris, mind your own business. You know, take care of your business in your district. Leave us alone. So we're going to fight hard on it. I don't think it's going to go very far because it takes the Congress, the House, and the Senate to pass it. And it takes the President of the United States to sign it. And I know President Obama is not going to sign something like that. I know that.
When we come back, we're going to hear from more callers. A lot of folks want to talk to you, and we will. So stay on the line. Stephanie, Angela, Steve, Catrice, Monica will be with you in just a moment. We're talking to Marion Barry, Ward 8 Council Member, Mayor for Life. We'll be back in just a bit. SXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking to Ward 8 Council Member Marion Barry about his legacy and his new autobiography, Mayor for Life, The Incredible Story of Marion Barry Jr. By the way, you're going to be at Bus Boys and Poets tomorrow night.
And also, people can log into Amazon.com and get the book. I think they get two. But get a book and get it right to your house. You don't have to go anywhere. I encourage everyone to read this book. It's full of information. It's full of inspiration. It's full of everything that can help those who are similar situation to me get out of it. We all go through storms, as I said earlier.
Well, let me get some phone calls in here because these people have been very, very patient. Steve, calling from Washington, D.C. Steve, what's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This question is a two-part question. Real quick, are you planning on running for any other office in the city? And do you think that anybody running for mayor from this point on has a chance by you being here and you being the mayor, known as the mayor for life?
Well, they have a chance if they listen. I'm working with Ms. Bowser, Mira Bowser, and she's been listening because this is a big government. It's a tough job. Over 40,000 employees, $11 billion budget. You can't run that just off the top of your head. And she and I have been talking about things she can do to avoid some of the difficulties that Vince Gray got into, some of the difficulties that Agent Fenton got into. And we've become a one-town, one-term mayor, starting with Sharon Pratt Kelly, then Agent Fenton, now Mayor Gray. And Tony Williams would have been a one-term mayor if Reverend Wilson, who ran against him, had started earlier. But in 3 months, Reverend Wilson got 36% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'd be a long time before anybody get four terms. It'd be a very long term.
Steve, thank you so much for your
phone
call.
People do that because they know I do a lot to help people.
Stephanie, calling from Capitol Heights. Go right ahead, Stephanie.
Good evening, gentlemen. My mayor for life, thank you for all that you've done for D.C. and for me being one of those summer youth recipients. I wanted to ask a question, Mayor Barry, about your education. I was told that you were pursuing a doctorate at one point. Is that correct? And
absolutely.
Did you finish?
I went to the University of Tennessee working on a doctorate. I stayed there for 3 years, which meant I had to make good grades. I couldn't be just there.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one more year to go to write my dissertation, but I got called into the civil rights movement, and I was getting tired of chemistry anyway at that time. When I was growing up in Memphis, there were about 5 or 6 things that black folks could do. You could be a teacher, a preacher, a dentist, a doctor, undertaker, or a social worker. And I didn't have enough money to even think about being a dentist or a doctor or anything like that. Didn't want to be a preacher, and didn't want to be a social worker. And the other thing that we did in Memphis was work at the post office. That was a good paying job. And so I decided to go into science. I love science. And at that time, I was a Russian scientist called Shapilov. I didn't have a middle name, so I gave myself that name. Everybody called me Shep.
is that in the book too? Because that, you know, that could be the, you know, 10 so. Things you don't know about Marion Barry.
That's right.
Stephanie, thank you so much for your phone call. Monica thank calling you. From Washington D.C. Go right ahead, Monica. Quickly, what's on your mind?
I really appreciate you. When I was young, you gave me my first summer job also. But my question is,
thank you.
How do you feel about National Capital Housing shut down for people that couldn't afford to keep their rent up and stuff like that as far as public housing? How do you feel about public housing shutting down where people have nowhere to live or unable to pay their rent?
Well, let me let him answer that. Go ahead. Go ahead, Mr. Mayor.
The national government has cut back on public housing. Republicans want to cut out public housing altogether, but we've been able to hold a fort. But here in Washington, I just went to the zoning commission the other night. We're going to rebuild Barry Farms. There are 444 families over there. We're offering each of those families an opportunity to come back into public housing. Obviously, you got to pay your rent. You can't just stay there without paying something. It's only a third of your income, so you're making, you know, $10. You pay $303, you know, stuff like that. But I support public housing residents. I support the poor. I support people who have lost hope, who have given up. We can't give up. You can't give in. You can't give up. You can't give out. And so what I say to people, whether you live in public housing or whether you're middle income, you cannot give up. If you don't get in the race, you surely won't win it. If you get in, you just might win it. Mm-hmm. If you get knocked down or push yourself down, fall down on your back. Because you can look up, you can get up. If you can get up, you can go up. And you can be successful because a setback is a setup for a comeback. That may sound like easy words, but it's real.
And we do hear that a lot around here. A lot of our colleagues are running that, and they believe that. So, Monica, you know, hang in there, and thank you so much for your phone call, Mr. Barry. If there was something that you could change about your tenure as mayor and council member, what would it be?
It probably would be bringing younger people along, which is kind of difficult. We don't have certain, but about 20-some positions, and it's hard. And nobody wants to wait for 4, 5, 10 years to take a position.
You're talking about in your administration as mayor?
No, I'm talking about in terms of the city, of finding young people who are bright and sort of mentor them. I mean, I do individuals, but I'm talking about in a massive way so that they can take our places. When we're going on, I'm not going to be here forever. In fact, I did start a kidney foundation movement. I got a kidney transplant 5 years ago here at Howard University. I'm doing well. But our young people need a lot of guidance and a lot of love. Because the other thing we have happening, I wish I could do something about, don't know how to do it, 82% of all the families in Ward 8 headed by female heads of household. And I admire those black women. But Effie and I had one son, Christopher, who's 34 2 days ago. And we had to scuffle to make sure he got into out of Byron school, make sure he had transportation to get there. He had money to buy his clothes and all this kind of stuff. What about those parents that don't have that kind of access, don't have that kind of out of boundary resources that you can use? Don't have a computer like Chris had, a computer a long time ago. It's those people I'm most worried about, because if we don't do something, we're going to create a permanent underclass, and we don't need that. Not at all.
What do you want your personal legacy to be? You are, by your own admission, you're a complicated person.
Absolutely.
Very complicated.
God did that. How did you do
that? So, you know, years from now, when we don't have Mary and Barry around to talk to, what do you want them to say about you?
In answer to another question earlier, do I intend to run for anything else? Answer, absolutely not. I have two more years on this term, and I'll decide as I go forth what I do with that. But I'm not interested in being mayor again. 16 years is a good time. I'm not interested in being chair of the city council. I'm not interested in going to the Congress. I'm not interested in any of that. Only thing I'm interested in doing is continuing to serve the people the best way I know how. I'm a stand-up guy. I fight. They can't push me around because black people have been pushed around too much. The other thing I preach to people, in terms of my legacy, is that I cared. I showed I cared. There's hardly anybody in Washington, directly or indirectly, have not been affected in a positive way by my policies. And God gave me that gift. And I use it. I give it back. You throw out love, you get love back. You throw out hate and negative thinking, you get that negative thinking back. And I give out nothing but love, nothing but appreciation, nothing but just want to help people to be the very best that they can be.
But you just said you have two more years in your term. Are you going to run again?
You know I'm not going to say that, yeah.
Oh, come on now. You got to give me a bone. Throw a brother a bone.
As much as I like you, you know I'm not going to do that. I'm one of the most skillful politicians in America. I've had 13 races, only lost one. And to be mayor for 16 years wasn't because of my name, but because of my service. And I love people. I love to help people. And I don't like a lot of things that people do sometimes, but I love people. And I show it. When I go into a room, I get an applause or something because people feel me, feeling them. Now, that's not true of some other politicians in this town.
Would you like to share whom you're talking
no,
about?
No, you know better.
I'm not going
to. I have to live here.
That's true.
And live with them, too.
Marion Barry, it's always good to see you. I certainly wish you, you know, the best of health and, you know, to keep pushing forward.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, sure. You know, Mississippi born, but certainly you are Washington.
Washington is Marion Barry, Marion Barry is Washington. We have built so much in this town and have developed so much. Again, people can get this book on Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. They can get it at Barnes & Noble or bookstore. We're going to be at
Busboys and Poets tomorrow.
On 14th and B.
Okay.
Tomorrow.
Well, you know, I need to get my signed copy, so, you know, I'm going to work on that, too.
I'll make sure you get one.
Well, thank you.
That's a promise from me.
Oh, I appreciate it.